The following program is brought to you by Agenda Feminist Media, empowering women for gender equity.
Barren throat whose voice was lost to shattering silence. Empty chest smooth with smothering her own dreams. Breasts brittle and dry from feeding world's need. Taut thighs tied with march, protest, birth, and calves whose veins tell truth of every brawl, silence, ache. She weeps as a heart thirsts for molten light.
Hello and welcome. My name is Thobeka Lind. It's 5 a.m. in a bitterly cold Cape Town, South Africa. 41-year-old Christina Fisa wakes up to the ritual of filling a 20-liter canister with water from a communal tap.
My name is Christina Fisa. I'm staying in Samora Machel. I'm the single parent. I'm the mother of four and the granny of two.
Christina lugs water at least three times a day so that her family can wash and prepare food.
I don't have a brick house. I've got the RTP house with a slab. It's one room. Our toilet was outside, even the taps are outside. So we are using the 20-liter buckets to drink from that water, to cook from the water, to wash from that water. But for the toilets, we have to use outside. But for in the toilet, we never see papa in the toilet.
Christina is one of over a billion people in developing countries who don't have direct access to clean running water. The crisis is worst in sub-Saharan Africa, where an astounding 2 in 5 people lack a safe water supply. Part of the region's dire water situation is the fact that only 36% of the population have access to adequate sanitation, which includes flush toilets and hand-washing facilities. So how do the remaining 64% live?
My name is Ellen Oudemaker. I live on an informal settlement called Zillerijn Heights. We a community of about 48 families, equals to about plus minus 250 people, that is with children. And we've been living on this informal settlements for 5.5 years. When we were moved here, we had no sanitation, we had no taps. At the moment, we have 17 bucket system toilets, but in the beginning, they were less. So we were about 4 to 5 families on one toilet, and one family can consist of about 10 people in one house. After we've complained to the health inspector and the municipality, we have 17 toilets now and 6 stand-up taps.
The bucket system toilet is traditionally a 20 to 25 litre black bucket, which is distributed to households and serviced by municipal workers. Eleanor tells us that often 3 families, comprising a total of at least 30 people, share one bucket in informal settlements.
In the past, we used to come and clean it once a week until we've complained and had fights with the municipality. We called the health inspector in. They clean it up thrice a week. It's still unhygienic because it's different people using the toilets. And as women with infections and things around, it's easy to get using the same toilet. So we're not satisfied with this bucket system. We feel that each family should have their own toilet and it shouldn't be the bucket system. It should be flush toilets.
Ethne Davy is the former chairperson of the Gender and Water Alliance. She explains that apart from the obvious health implications of poor access to adequate water and sanitation, there are safety concerns for women which are not being addressed.
I don't believe that there should be a need for women not to have toilets. I don't believe that women today should be getting raped on their way to the toilet, and they should not be communal toilets. But somehow the policies and the various authorities are not talking to the people. Yeah, we are sort of in isolated little islands, all saying the same thing but not doing anything about it. And as the years have gone by, I've actually seen this whole toilet scenario getting worse.
South Africa has the highest incidence of rape in the world. According to the South African Police Service, a woman is raped every 17 seconds. This does not include the number of child rape victims. Women living in rural areas and informal settlements are the most vulnerable. Eleanor explains the danger she has faced when trying to access a communal bucket toilet.
We as women and children must use the toilets at night. There's no electricity. It's very dark on this field. And anyone can come here. You don't know who belongs here and who don't at night because it's so dark. So for us as women and children, it is very dangerous to use those toilets.
Christina adds,
it was very problematic to have the toilet outside because I was having two children at that time, and it's the daughters. I don't have, like, boys. My kids have running tummy, and I have to wake up in the middle of the night to escort them to go to the toilet. The worst part of it is next door. The guy is selling, like, drugs. So you want to get to the toilet, and there's somebody sitting there, and you don't even know that person. I remember the other day, when I go to the toilet, I found this guy. I thought maybe it's one of my neighbors. So I realized, no, it's not my neighbors. So I asked, who are you and where do you come from? Said, he's coming from Langa. So the way the guys were chasing him, so he decided to come to my toilet. And it was in winter, so it was still dark. So the guy was having a gun on his lap in my yard. So it was very difficult for us.
The South African government has attempted to rectify the situation by implementing a free basic water policy. The policy seeks to deliver on the rights to water and sanitation, as enshrined in the country's constitution. But is this policy working in the areas where it is needed most? We pose this question to Ethne Davey.
It works very well in cities like Cape Town, Durban, Johannesburg. Meters are there, people pay their water bills. But it does not work in a rural situation, merely because there are no meters. Very often the water infrastructure is broken down. In fact, I did a study a few years back because I was going to present a paper at the United Nations on it, which I was then requested by the Minister of Water Affairs, Sunjika. But after I had done the study, I advised her that it would be an embarrassment to the Department of Water Affairs if this was presented to the United Nations, merely because it works in an urban area, but it does not work in a rural area.
To date, South Africa is one of 15 African states that have enshrined the right to basic water and sanitation in its national constitution.
South Africa has come up with tremendous documentation, but policy is one thing. Implementing that policy is another thing. This is where we have come unstuck. It's the implementation of those policies. And somehow, instead of it getting better, it seems to be getting worse as the years go by. When the minister says that 75% of South Africans have water, she doesn't say 75% of South Africans have infrastructure. Nobody says, is that infrastructure working? Is there water coming out of the tap?
We ask Davy, what measures can be put in place to ensure delivery?
Well, it's very difficult because somebody's got to pay for the infrastructure. To collect revenue efficiently for the payment of water, why isn't there an extra tax put on? A 1% extra tax, which would then pay for the water infrastructure. We add extra taxes for roads, we have extra taxes for this, an extra tax, and people pay, we grumble, but we pay. But an essential thing that you cannot live without, why is there not an extra tax on that to be able to build the infrastructure?
Ethne Davy says there are alternatives.
Why haven't the houses in South Africa got rainwater tanks? Why is there no emphasis on rainwater harvesting? Because whichever way you look at it, there'll always be people that will not be in a financial position to pay for water. And somehow we've got to look at the haves and the have-nots. So this is why this whole free basic water came into being, is the haves, they use more water than that woman in the rural village does. But on the other hand, if that woman in the rural village had two tanks supplied to her, and her neighbors all had tanks, then for all we know, she would have sufficient water to carry her through the winter months, because it's really the winter months when they're the worst off. But we don't do this, and the water runs to sea, down the rivers and so on. So that, in my opinion, is the one way to address that. But of course, the ideal situation, the nice to have, would be to add an extra tax.
The consequences of poor water and sanitation are far-reaching. In the developing world, 1 million girls drop out of school every year due to inadequate sanitation at school.
We talk of building women's capacity, but we're not addressing it in the school at that very level. A child goes to school, they reach puberty. Where do they change their sanitary towel? In a dirty, filthy toilet? Or there is no toilets, there is no privacy. So she stays at home for 5 days a month. In the end, she's always behind with her studies, and so she drops out before she even gets to matric. Now, there is somebody's education capacity has not been built, so what's the likelihood of her getting a decent job? So we are actually continuing to perpetuate the inability of women's capacity.
I wish the government can do the inspection before whatever to give the people the building or whatsoever. In most cases, most especially in our area, you can even go, even now, the drains are boiling there. Everything is coming out. And we've got kids who've got asthma, so it's not good for them. The government mustn't just give us the money to do some stuff, then she can sit back and say, okay, I give them the money, so it's fine. So she must do the follow-up to check if things are doing properly.
That was Christina Fisa bringing us to the end of this program on women, water and sanitation. Visit our website to listen to the full interviews.
This program was brought to you by Agenda Feminist Media, empowering women for gender equity.